Okay, we just have another one. I just want to mention this. Fluid in the cul-de-sac. We always want to look for that. And what might it indicate? Yeah, or this, and we see an intrauterine pregnancy with this one, but it also could be just a ruptured cyst. Those are a couple of possibilities. All right, do you see what I see? This was last week, right here. Do y'all see anything? Come on, tell me what you see. What do you see? You see a uterus, don't you? Yeah, don't you see it? Right over here. Yeah, right there, the eye of the storm. Gestational sac. Where your eyes, your thoughts go, don't they? I just thought that was kind of fun. Okay, we'll just talk about measurements for a couple minutes. Do you have any questions? We'll just talk, y'all will ask some questions about measurements. And I think I just want to mention to you, I think measurements are really important. That if you're going to be doing scans and you're telling them those three things, that one is the estimated gestational age, you want to have the skills to find those accurate measurements. It's a medical indication for that scan, and women who are considering abortion need informed choices, and we want to give them accurate information because that's what we're telling them we're going to do. And then we often see them in early pregnancy. When they're most accurate, that's about 7 weeks. Those crown rumps are usually the most accurate measurement for all pregnancy. Due dates should never change after initial ultrasound, and you're often going to be the ones that do those. So anytime women are later in pregnancy, you're going to find them. You need to get them into care. Stacy, how late? How late was your gal?
She was 38.
Was it? 36.5. Yeah. Had no plan for this pregnancy. At 36 weeks, 5 days. I mean,
she actually went on to make an adoption plan and have a beautiful adoption.
And they directed her through this. This was right after you finished your training almost. But, you know, if your docs are on the fence and think, we don't want to do those scans later. I mean, I do hear some that don't want to do them past 12 weeks. Some that don't want to do them past 14 weeks. You know, we just find women like this little gal that came in last week, 13 years old at 15 weeks. We want to give them accurate information. And like for Stacy, she was able to direct her to get into care, like get, go, 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 go. And if you don't have a plan, we can connect you with resources. And she did. It turned out to be a wonderful thing. So you do want to, those people you want to get in. And then if you have OB providers contacting you for early scanning information, you want it to be accurate because they may plan deliveries based on your information. So it means you want to have accurate measurement. Yes. Can do what now?
Our docs say our RDMS is an ultrasound.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, if they have not had any care, I think that we need to tell them this is how far along you need to get care. You need to get care. I mean, you can't say that enough. And document that you have told that over and over and over. And after your physician reads the scans, call them back and say, our doc has confirmed the information I've given you. You need to get into care. That's why you never want to imply ongoing care. And we're going to talk about appropriate language, too. Okay, for accuracy, good practice to make measurements at least 2 times. If there's a greater than 3 millimeter variance, an additional measurement's good. Look at images for accuracy, placement of calipers, etc., and look at clusters, things that cluster and throw away the outliers. You don't want average good and bad data. Talked about measuring gestational sacs. When you don't see an embryo, always measure a gestational sac. The accuracy of a gestational sac is 5 to 7 days. So in a sagittal plane, you're going to measure the height and the length of that sac in a sagittal plane. Then in a transverse plane, you're going to measure the width of it. So you're going to do three-dimensional object. You're going to measure it in 3 planes is what you want to do. That's how it's done. Yes?
So on that one on the left,
Uh-huh.
Am I seeing it correctly? I'm wondering where you put the caliper on the...
The longest part and the widest part.
Okay.
But this is actually a length. It's not a width, but it's...
Okay.
Okay? But the greatest distances is where you want it.
Okay, so what about that little point down there? Mm-hmm. I noticed earlier you've done one for a 7 point.
I would move this probably down a little bit, yeah. And then I would measure, this is the width in transverse.
Yeah.
So you're going to do two planes, three measurements. And your machine will average those and give you that information. The gestational sac, again, grows approximately 1 millimeter a day, and it's not as accurate as a crown rump. This is somewhat newer information if you've been scanning for years on failed pregnancy diagnosis. Typically, what's been encouraged lately is if you see a gestational sac with no embryo, and the mean sac diameter, that's those three measurements, is less than 25 millimeters, she should be scanned again in 7 days. Now, if y'all are not doing repeat scans, typically you would encourage them to go elsewhere and get a scan within 7 days, according to your physician. And here's what, if there's no embryo in a sac 25 millimeters, that would be diagnostic. You don't make the diagnosis, your physician does, but these are diagnostic scans. That would be a non-viable pregnancy. The old guidelines used to say 16 millimeters. If you didn't see an embryo in three measurements and it came to 16 or beyond, that was considered non-viable. They're now deciding to give that embryo, that baby, a chance rather than going in and doing a DNC. My website, Sonographers Do It in the Dark, last week was talking about that they've had this happen a lot where women were encouraged to have DNCs and then they're finding a baby after they'd already been told they had a failed pregnancy. So just for information. And then no yolk sac seen in an empty sac, greater than 10 millimeters is considered a failed. And then no fetal cardiac activity in a pregnancy of 7 millimeters is considered a failed. And it used to be 5. So they've increased those numbers to give it the possibility of protecting a pregnancy that may end up showing up, I guess is the word I would say, instead of considering it failed and doing a DNC, which I think is why. Crown rump length, these are what you want to be really good at because you're going to do a whole lot of those. Most accurate there, you can measure them up to 13 weeks, 6 days. And again, between 6 and 12 weeks, the accuracy is plus or minus 3 to 5 days. At this stage, there's very little biologic, ethical, familial variation in early pregnancy. Two measurements, compare those, and then you're measuring the longest axis of the baby's body. And if you see this rhombencephalon, you always want to include that. You do not want to measure yolk sac there. Here's one. This is going back to this whole issue about doing measurements and early. This baby was thought to be 7 weeks. By LNP, this woman was thought to be 7 weeks, 4 days. Well, measured a crown rump here, 5 weeks, 6 days, and picked up on fetal cardiac activity there. 5 weeks, 6 days. We're starting to see those. So encourage you to do those. Okay, and again, just compare your measurements to two different images with baby. Want those crown rump lengths to be within 3 millimeters. This is a good one for looking at an abdominal versus a vaginal scan. This was just in the last week or two. This is the best image we could get abdominally in measuring that crown rump. And look what it measured. 10 weeks, 6 days at 3.95. Went to a vaginal scan. We're able to get that image there. We got 11.4. So that's significant amount of difference there. Again, that's superiority of vaginal scanning, plus this is not the greatest image. That was the best we could get. I thought, let's just try and measure an abdominal measurement, see what we can get. And here's what we got, both of those. Okay, which of these would you use as consider most accurate? I would use this one over here. This one we see top of the head, that is not a rump. Typically, after even 7 weeks, the rump should be very pointed. If it's round, you're picking up usually the bottom of the abdomen. You want to just look for the longest axis of baby's body. Again, a round rump end is not usually a rump. It's usually part of the front part of the abdomen. Okay, this is just one of these. This is one of these ones that has just been in my heart for months. This was a pregnancy center where I did a training on the West Coast. This young woman had come in. She was actually in her probably her late 20s. Had come into the pregnancy center at about 6 weeks. Saw baby's heart beating, measured baby and so forth, and her boyfriend was really, really, really pressuring her to have an abortion. So she went and took RU-486 on a Friday afternoon. That night, she got a text from this boyfriend telling her, he said, I just love your babies, because she had two other children. And she explained it to me. She said he was really telling me he really loved the kids I had, and that was enough, and kind of be supportive. And she said, and I realized I had a baby inside of me. I got up out of bed. I started Googling, and I looked, and she found abortion pill reversal. How many of y'all are using that? Any of you have reference resource to that? You have at least instructions for it. She got on the phone. She called. She talked to somebody in my area. I live in Virginia. And she called the hotline during the night. This is what tends to happen. They take it Friday afternoon, hope this is going to end over the weekend, go back to work on Monday. She got a hold of somebody in Virginia Friday night, and they referred her to a physician 60 miles away. She got up the next morning on Saturday, went 60 miles away to see a physician. He gave her the progesterone pills. She took those, and she said, I took them until I ran out of money. I couldn't afford anymore. And they were doing a training at that pregnancy center where they had seen her initially. And here's her baby, first scan since she'd seen it at 6 weeks after RU-486. And this girl was still so scared, but she was so at peace and so determined to carry this pregnancy. And the boyfriend's long gone now. He's out of this picture. He only wanted her, if she was going to have an abortion, not have his child. And here we go. Don't y'all love it? Don't you love it? Okay, let's just talk about BPDs. And Gatsi, how are we doing?
Good.
We're okay?
Yeah.
Okay. BPDs, here's what one of the textbooks say. The BPD can accurately be measured through any plane of section that traverses the third ventricle and thalami. So this is the valve. There's the thalami. Looks like a heart, looks like bat wings, looks like butterfly. So if you cross this third ventricle here in the thalamus, you can measure outer to inner. That is our main landmarks. And here's another image. Again, outer, closest to the probe. This is where the reflection of the sound beam is the sharpest and bounces back. And then the inner wall of the calvarium is where it's going to be the sharpest. 90 degrees. You want to check. There's the thalamus right there, third ventricle. And then we have an accurate BPD there. And in front of that, this little structure, what's that little structure in the front? Cavum, septum, pellucidum? Yeah, do you have a question?
Yeah, I did. Can you help explain
where
the third
ventricle is? Okay, okay. The falx is the midline that separates the cerebral hemispheres. This is the falx right here. And this is the thalamus. The third ventricle is actually in the middle of that thalamus there. You definitely want to see the falx and some of the thalamus there. Those are your main landmarks there. Yeah, it looks like a real... Yeah, you said. Bright reflection right in the middle. Do you know what the dural fold is, Dotsie? I don't know that.
That is in the center?
I don't.
I might have the words wrong, but it's something fold, but it's where the...
I don't.
Anyway, it was confusing to me.
I don't know that term. That's not anything I'm familiar with at all. Okay. Okay. Most of the people that send me images, that have me review images, because usually if I do trainings or I have follow-up or they're sending me images before we come in and do trainings and stuff, they will send me BPD images, and they will often look like this. they see the falcon, they see something up there, but that would be up too high. I'm above the thalamus. So that would be, that measurement would not be accurate because it would be too small. You're up here. Then at the accurate level for the BPD, you're going to see the falcon, midline falcon. There is the thalamus right there. That would be an accurate level. And then sometimes, just so, this is too low. This, it kind of looks like at times the bone structures make an X there where the brain stem goes through it. This is too low, just right, too high. So if you're thinking through anatomy and you're actually in that plane scanning, you on baby's head, like, okay, if you're down low, you're just going to move in that same plane up. If you're too high, come down. If you're too low, go up to get at that right level for that BPD. And again, this seems to be the most common measurement error that I see that makes the measurement too small. Okay, look at this. Well, I couldn't tell you exactly, but probably enough to just, I want to be accurate. That's all I can tell you. Probably by several days. If you can get that other one, if you can get this one, you can get the right one because you're in the right plane. Here, okay, look at these two images. I asked you to look at about two or three things you could tell me about them. Are they accurate? I'm saying somebody say no. Are either of them accurate? Good. Neither of these are accurate. If I were going to critique these images, first of all, these heads are way too little to get good images because you could be filling up the screen with this. Fill up this, change the depth, fill up the screen. This image here, I see the falx, I see a little bit of thalamus, but it's way too forward on the measurement toward the front, so it's toward the front of the head that's here, and so it's going to measure small. This one, what's wrong with this?
Too high.
There's no thalamus there. This is called choroid plexus. If you only see choroid plexus, it looks like kidney beans up high. That is too high. So actually, neither of these would be accurate measurements. And they need to be bigger. If someone had filled up the screen with that, they might have gotten a better idea that these are not very accurate. Because on the image, they were like this big. The landmarks are there, but it's too far front. Wide portion through. Okay, which one of these would you use? Just kind of. Good. All of you know that. See again, the same kind of thing. Too high. We see way too many of these. Too low. People don't usually get these confused, but I just want you to know what it looks like too low, and this would be right level where you see your measurements. Okay. Just femur lengths. Femur lengths are an option if your physicians approve them. If you're getting, you can't get those great BPDs. In my opinion, between 14 and 18 weeks are the most challenging. Those babies swim like crazy. They're contortionists, and then they can get in these weird positions. And you just can't get good measurements. I think a good BPD is preferable to a poor, I think a good femur is preferable to a poor BPD. And so your femur, you're going to measure just end to end, if your physician approves of that, and you're going to make, you would like to have this perpendicular. You measure the one closest to the probe. This one is, see how it's straight. As the beam gets further apart, it disperses and increases the bowing. And this would be a more accurate measurement, shaft to shaft, avoiding the femoral and distal epiphyses there. Okay? And I just like this because some years ago in the OB office where I worked, I got through with all my measurements because we did a lot of measurements and different things. And I looked and I had measured what I thought was a femur, but there was a head right by it. What had I done? I had measured a humerus. And so just be careful when you're scanning to make sure you look at the landmarks. Look at the surrounding structures. Usually the bladder will show up in that image. Or you'll see some of the tailbone or something, you'll know. But if you're seeing, you know, a head anywhere near there, or a heart, right, almost connected, know that you are probably on the wrong structure. And I just want to talk about just a little bit of accountability here. Just This comes from the Oregon's Nurse Practice Act, and it says the accountability of nurse practice. This is what it says. A nurse accepts responsibility for individual nursing actions, maintains competence in one's area of practice. This was in my Nurse Practice Act when I was practicing in Oregon a couple of years ago. This came out in 2008. How many of you have looked at your Nurse Practice Act in the last year? One of you? Two of you? Three of you? You need to be keeping up with your Nurse Practice Acts. They might say really important things. Years ago when I was in Georgia, I went into scanning and sonography and stuff. I looked at my Nurse Practice Act and I thought, I don't know what this thing is saying. It's really, I thought it was a squishy document with a lot of high-sounding words, but nothing definite. I've moved to Oregon, and I read my Nurse Practice Act there. It still didn't tell me anything. But then in 2008, they came out with this. And then it says, obtains instruction and supervision as necessary when implementing nursing practices, accepts only nursing assignments for which one is educationally prepared, has the current knowledge, skills, and ability to safely perform, maintains documentation of the method by which the competency is gained, and evidence that it's been maintained. These are all parts of the Nurse Practice Act in the state of Oregon. Key word in my mind is competence. Yes. Well, our NIFLA's medical advisor, Dotsie and I both teach with NIFLA, is that you would have your skills assessed on an annual basis. Either a physician, or an RDMS that knows how to assess skills. I mean, just as a nurse, know a skill, would you be able to assess somebody's skills initially for it? You need to have somebody that really understands it. That would be the recommendation. You need something in your personnel file, somebody that's looked at all your skills and then documents that, signs you off that they think you are competent or gives you areas of weakness that you need work on, and keep it in your personnel file. Now, NIFLA does the initial classroom instruction with an introduction. Dotsie and I have a training group that we do this all the time, that we come in and do skills assessment. So here's my friend Carolyn Schrage. You'll probably know her. She's here from Joplin, Missouri, Life Choices. She says the benchmark should be, we should constantly ask ourselves, what is the normal expected standard for care and operations for a medical clinic in our community? That would be what our expectation would be. And our faith and commitment to life compels us to provide service with excellence in the practicing medical clinic. The women and the unborn deserve nothing less than excellence in care. Here's some things that we would recommend that you would try to scan weekly. Try to do about 2 to 3 scans a week, 100 to 150 a year. Seek to both maintain, you're going to need a good number of scans to maintain your skills and to grow those. And growing in image recognition, utilizing reference text, that's one thing. Use models if you need to get your numbers up so you have more experience. An annual assessment for competency. And then Dotsie and I have done some, we're doing webinars with NIFLA. If you're members of NIFLA, we're starting to do webinars that you can go on those and watch those. Log in, and we've got 2 up right now. If you need continuing ed, we charge for those because I have to pay for the privilege of offering those, and it's administrative. But they're free if you're members of NIFLA that you can look at those. Yes?
What about 3D scans? I mean, 3D. Do you recommend using?
I love the technology of it. I only know a few centers that use it. I think, it's really good usually after 20 weeks. It's really great after 20 weeks. What percentage of women do you see after 20 weeks? Not very many. My own experience, and again, I do like the technology, but where I have been where they've used it, the patients actually weren't very excited about it. One of them says, she actually looked at it and she said, I think that's terrifying because can look like the arms cut off or part of the head's sawed away, those kind of things. Now, if this was your job and you were doing these all the time, you probably would be highly skilled at it. But the question I would just ask, is it good use of your money for what you're going to do? It is going to cost you more to maintain that probe and machine. I'm not against it. But could look at all those things, maintenance, insurance.
Maybe it's a routine thing you wouldn't use it with. Because, I mean, we've scanned it early. I mean, we've seen 8 weeks. We've done 8 weeks. My RDMS. And it's cool to see, but, you know.
Do the moms, are the moms that crazy over it?
Not the parent, not the ones that are going to parent. The ones that are going to parent, yes, but not the KAMs or anything like that.
Yeah.
We bring models in for 20 plus weeks just to practice on and kind of give them. And if a girl chooses life, like, you know, an AM, then we might bring it later on as a model, again, to practice, but to be able to.
So I would have, I'm kind of neutral about it. And again, just looking at all the different factors, your money, stewardship, I have not seen the moms excited about it, quite honestly. And I would have thought I would. Yes. The webinars? Well, you'd have to check around and find. We do that. We're at our booth this week. If you want to come talk to us, we'll talk to you about doing this, because we do this all the time.
Okay.
We do trainings, but we also do skills assessments over 2 days for up to 5 nurses, that kind of thing, on an annual basis. Or you might have somebody local that you can get to do it, or your physician. That's a call that you would make, but. Okay, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Utilizing references, do you have a recommendation?
I'll tell you what. As of this week, the world's most popular textbook has been Ultrasonography in Obstetrics and Gynecology by Peter Callan, and the newest edition just came out from that, and it's about $135. They've been putting these out 92, 2000, 2007, and one came out this week.
Can you say the name of it again?
Ultrasonography in Obstetrics and Gynecology. And it's about this thick. I think it's red. It's the world's most popular book. You need to have textbooks. Did any of you ever take college courses and you didn't bother with a textbook? I mean, this is your area of profession. So learn everything you can. Grow your skills. Grow your knowledge so that you can serve well. I just want to wrap us up here, and let's do this. Do you have any questions before we wrap up? I have actually another PowerPoint that I didn't get to, so it was not too lengthy. Yes. Yes. I have it here. I brought you the American Institute of Ultrasound Medicine official statements, guidelines for cleaning and preparing external and internal ultrasound probes between patients. This is it. And what you need is a high-level disinfectant. Years ago, we thought just wiping those things off was enough. But now you really do need, there's a couple of products, either Cydex OPA, or there's another product, peroxide product called Revitalox by Steris. It needs to be soaked. That's pretty important. So long as you have ventilation in the room. Yeah. You need to have the room needs to be ventilated, and you need to keep the lids on those things. Yeah, but here it is, and I'll have this at the NIFL booth if you want to come and Dotson. I'll be there if you want to talk to us about it. I'll be happy to talk to you more about it. But you do need a high level disinfectant. Abdominal probe, spray it with a Protex, like Rich had back there. Spray it, wipe it down, and it should be good to go. But the vaginal probes, it's pretty important that you soak those. Do this for us. You've got a sticky there. Write down a prayer request for yourself there in relation to what you do in your pregnancy center. Dotsie and I want to just, we just want to close by praying for you. We just so appreciate what you do. Like just the scans and the images I showed you today. You face some hard things and some painful things, and you're willing to have your hearts broken, I believe, for what breaks God's heart. And sometimes I've come out of scans thinking, nobody cared about that baby, it felt like, but me and God. And you bear that pain in your heart for that child that you have seen on, you've scanned it, you've had that privilege of sharing that little life for a short time, even if it ended, that was still a privilege for you to rejoice in that life. And yes, what were you going to say? Okay, let's do that. If you will write down prayer request, it'd be Dotsie's and mine privilege to pray for you. Are there any others you want to share? I gave y'all a pad. I said pull one off and pass it back. Okay. Here, I want to ask you to remember a couple of things too. This 15-year-old that I showed you the scans of, that has already tried to self-abort a couple of times, that she would carry at this point. She was going to tell her parents. And this young Ethiopian girl with the heart failure, that God would grant her favor. I would pray for healing, life, you know, health and safety, to baby makes a stage of viability possibly. Those are the kind of things that that are really tough calls. Really, really tough calls. And here, I wanted to share this verse with you. Dotsie, you want to pass those around? My lavender? If you each want to take one of these, just pieces of lavender, they are a mess, I will tell you that. They're all over my hotel room. They're everywhere they go. But this is my favorite plant, because to me the fragrance of lavender is just like a heavenly scent. And the interesting thing about it is the scent is the strongest when it's crushed. It produces the most strongest scent. But this is one of my favorite scriptures. And one of you talked about confidence in what you do. It says, this is in 2 Corinthians 2, 14 to 16. It says, but thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph in Christ and manifests through us the sweet aroma of the knowledge of him in every place. For we are a fragrance of Christ to God among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing. To one, the aroma from death to death, the other aroma of life to life. And it says, who is adequate for these things? That is you. You are a fragrance of Christ to the people that God puts you in contact with. And it says, and then the next chapter, just a few verses down, it says, such confidence we have through Christ toward God. Not that we are adequate to consider anything as coming from ourselves, but our adequacy is from God, who has made us competent as ministers of a new covenant. So really, I would hope that you would have all the skills, the knowledge, the ability you could possibly have to serve well, to serve the women, the unborn, and that your confidence would be in God, that you're doing everything you know to serve well, to bring honor to him, that you would be a fragrance of the knowledge of Jesus Christ where you are.